Why this much emotion, Coach?
Well, it's such a big game. They beat us for 8 years. We got tired of hearing their stuff, man. I mean, it was time. I told the team tonight, we draw the line. We had enough. Here we come.
If you follow college football, you probably know that voice. It belongs to a guy who's loud and tough and might be more suited for his job than anyone in America. LSU head coach Ed Orgeron. Today, ahead of Monday's national championship game against Clemson, we tell the story of a man who seems like he was built in a lab to coach football in Louisiana, and why, despite that, it's actually surprising that he ended up there at all. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Friday, January 10th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Dell Small Business. David, how's it going?
It is going quite well, Mina. Thank you for having me.
David Hale writes about college football for ESPN. So your story is about Coach Ed Orgeron, really the legend of Coach Ed Orgeron. But I want to start by talking to you about perhaps his most noteworthy characteristic, which is, of course, his voice.
To get to where you want to go, it seems like you have to go undefeated. You have to beat Alabama. You have to keep on going, and then you have to win the SEC championship. Then you get the college football playoffs, you know. So if you start thinking about all that stuff.
My favorite thing in the world, David, is being in a room and watching someone hear it for the first time. Because it really never fails to shock anyone who's hearing it.
We knew we was going to win that game today. We started off Monday knowing we're going to win this game. Go Tigers.
Don't you want Ed Orgeron to write his autobiography just so he can also do the voiceover work?
What's on the menu at the Orgeron household today? What do we got?
Well, Coco, my mom, made a special gumbo, but it was under one circumstance. We better win the game.
It would just be so wonderful. One of his first jobs was at Arkansas as assistant strength coach. The players there thought he was pranking them. They didn't think that anyone actually talked that way. And they couldn't make heads or tails of what he was saying either. It was just he would get excited and start saying things with this gravelly Cajun accent. And then he'd point in a direction and they would just go do whatever was in that direction because they had no idea what he was saying. But he was saying it loud enough that they were afraid of him. And it was only after, like, he'd been on the job for a month or two that they were like, well, he's kept this up a long time. I guess that is his voice.
We love the voice. Everyone does now. But it, at times, has cost him, no?
Yeah. You know, he's coached in some places that are not Louisiana. Everybody talks about how he's a great fit at LSU. But he was in Miami. He was in Syracuse. He was in USC. And his last stint in USC, he came on to replace Lane Kiffin as the interim coach there, had some success at USC. And I think there were folks there who would have loved to have given him the full-time job because he had that success. But there were also folks, has been reported by numerous folks, I think including Bruce Feldman, that the voice was one of the reasons you couldn't hire him as USC's coach because you're the voice of the program. You're the face of the program. You're the identity of the program. And that's not USC, right? That's not LA. Look at how he talks. He's not the model of USC, so we can't hire him. And there's a lot of folks at USC who are probably kicking themselves for that exact thought process now.
Well, the voice is a perfect fit for LSU. I mean, just about everything about Coach O is a perfect fit for LSU. It's almost like if you reverse engineered a coach based on Louisiana football, it would look, sound, and act like him. And he's got roots, right, in the state of Louisiana.
He is from Lafourche Parish. It's bayou country outside of New Orleans. His dad grew up on shrimp boats, and I mean, it is in a lot of ways just every bit the sort of central casting version of what we think of as Bayou Louisiana. You know, if you've watched The Waterboy, you kind of have a rough idea of what I think Ed Orgeron's background is. One of the great anecdotes that his mom gave me, so he was in second grade and broke his leg. And the doctor fitted him for a cast. It went from foot all the way up to the upper thigh. And he picked up some crutches and went out there and played football on crutches. And about every week or so, she would have to drag him back into the doctor's office to get fitted for a new cast because he would get it so dirty and muddy and mucked up from playing football in a full leg cast.
I'm sorry, they let a second grader play football with a full leg cast?
I don't know that even "let" is the proper word there so much as he just went and did it.
So he kept playing in high school, then college?
Ed Orgeron got to high school, and he was a full-grown man from day one. He was a big guy and went to college as a defensive lineman. He ended up at LSU for a year and hated it because for the first time in his life, football was hard. He was not having immediate success. He was not playing routinely. He was being forced to go to classes he wasn't super eager to go to. And he left LSU, went back home and thought, maybe that's the end of college and football and I'll go get a real bayou job like my dad, and I'll go work on a shrimp boat. And turns out, you may be surprised to learn, that working on a shrimp boat is much less fun than playing football. And so I think that was, you know, when you talk to his mom, that summer after he left LSU and went back home to work real jobs was in a lot of ways sort of a turning point for Coach O, in that he got a taste of what life is like when everything is not being handed to you.
So how did he end up back in football?
He decided he needed to go play football again, which meant he had to go back to college, which was not really his favorite thing, but he decided to go to Northwest Louisiana State. That's where he finished his career and then went looking for football coaching jobs. And the first job he could find was as a strength coach. And
shocker.
Yeah, shocker that this like 300-pound beast of a man finds a strength coaching job. And the job was with Arkansas. Ken Hatfield was the coach at the time. Ed walks in and he's this beast of a man and he's got that voice and he's so excited and he's like, I don't know if he can do this job, but he sure looks the part. So we're going to hire him. And that's how he ended up getting into coaching. He worked at Arkansas for a little while and I think he really wanted to do something more than being the strength coach. He ends up landing, miraculously enough, at the absolute heart of college football in the 1980s and early 1990s, which is at the University of Miami.
They celebrate in Miami. The Hurricanes complete an unbeaten year, 22-0.
Coaching on the same staff as Tommy Tuberville. Tuberville was telling me they went down to Key West on vacation one year, and they're in like this nice restaurant having dinner and get to talking about football technique, and Orgeron's so excited about it, he like slides tables out of the way and gets down in a three-point stance, and he's trying to explain technique to Tuberville, and he's like pushing tables and chairs out of the way, and like diners are just looking over, gawking at what the heck is this man doing here. But that's just sort of the approach that he brought, and I think his time at Miami really offered him an opportunity to prove that behind that bluster and the raspy, gravelly Cajun voice, that there's a guy who really knows a heck of a lot about football.
How did it go for him in Miami off the field?
Not great. He was someone who went out a lot, drank a lot, and the things that you could get away with when you're 20 at Northwestern Louisiana, you don't get away with as a coach on the staff of one of the premier programs in college football. And so, you know, the story that really, I think, ended up upending his career involved him being at a bar. He was thrown out of the bar for being too intoxicated, and he was not happy with that and ended up getting into a fight, and legal proceedings happened. And that essentially was the end of his time in Miami. But I think it was also sort of a wake-up call for him. So when he gets away from football, it was in a lot of ways probably very much like when he went back to work the shrimp boats after leaving LSU, is that he kind of realized, this isn't the life that I want. This isn't who I want to be. I don't think that he shies away from those stories now. He still shares them with current players in a way of trying to relate to them. and kind of going through it in a lot of ways has probably been what pushed him to turn things around and become the person that he is now.
Coming up, Gumbo, Red Bull, and the game that could solidify Coach O as a Louisiana legend.
The best teams start with great talent, but finding the right people can be a challenge. I mean, just ask the New York Knicks. When it comes to hiring for your business, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidates for your team fast, from healthcare to manufacturing to business services and more. And now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 top job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So, David, after Coach O leaves Miami, he does some soul searching, turns his life around. How does he get back into coaching?
Paul Pasqualoni was the head coach at Syracuse, and he's the guy who kind of rescued Ed Orgeron from the scrap heap after the Miami debacle and brought Cajun Ed Orgeron up to Central New York to coach at Syracuse, which is sort of mind-bending in its own right. Pasqualoni had this program where when players returned for fall camp in August, they would do this really strict conditioning program that involved bench pressing, running, and a lot of it. And it was Pasqualoni's way of testing whether they had let themselves go over the summer or whether they had stayed in shape. And so before all the kids go off for their summer vacation, Coach O says to his position group, y'all better not come back out of shape. And just to prove I'm not kidding, I'm going to go and do all of the same conditioning stuff you are when you come back. And you better not, I believe this was his quote, get your ass whipped by a 35-year-old man. Ed spent the summer hardcore training for this. And when all the players come back in August, sure enough, there's Ed Orgeron running 100-yard dash after 100-yard dash and bench pressing 405 pounds. And the entire D-line just erupts and like jumps on top of him celebrating this. That was the whole thing with him, is that he didn't want to ask anybody to do something that he wasn't willing to do too. When he left Syracuse to go to USC, Kyle Federle, who is the equipment manager at Syracuse and has been for years and years, was telling me he was in the locker room when Orgeron told his players he was leaving. He's like, I never seen anything like it. 300-pound grown men defensive linemen just sobbing that their position coach was leaving. And so I think you see going way back the way that he manages to connect with people. That, I think, has been in many ways the absolute key to his success, is that he is first and foremost a people person.
When he went to USC, the head coach at the time was Pete Carroll, who, if Ed Orgeron is hard to picture as like a LA coach, it feels like Pete Carroll is the perfect USC coach, right? They're about as far apart as you can get. What did Pete make of Coach O?
He loved him. One of the really stunning quotes that I got in doing this was Pete essentially said when Coach O left, he got hired to coach at Ole Miss because they, you know, USC is at the peak of its power in 2004, and Ole Miss decides, well, let's get a little bit of that Southern Cal magic and bring it out here. And Pete Carroll said it just was not the same at USC after Ed Orgeron left. It was Ed Orgeron who knew where all the recruits were, who had built relationships, who made kids excited about coming to play at USC, and who kept that excitement going for years. And when he left, it was still USC, but without some of that heart and soul.
After being the defensive line coach at USC, Kojo gets a shot at being a head coach at Ole Miss. How did that go for him?
It was a rude awakening for him. He was let go after 3 years as the Ole Miss coach. But if you hear him talk about it now and you hear other folks talk about that experience, it's funny because I think it's very much true of both of the coaches that are in this national championship game, is that failure has really been, in a lot of ways, their great teacher.
You know, there's no manual on how to be a head coach. So I went out there as a defensive line coach. Guess what? It didn't work. You know, you have to coach the team different. Had to be a CEO. Treat the players. Let the players know that you care about them, number one. And number two, that you have the knowledge to get them there.
Both of those guys, Dabo and Orgeron, have done a wonderful job understanding why they failed, learning lessons from it, surrounding themselves with better people and putting those people in a position to be successful. You can see the energy and appreciation that Coach O has because of those experiences now.
So in 2015, David, Coach O is fired. He goes to LSU, fulfilling his destiny and becoming a D-line coach there. Then a year later, their head coach, Les Miles, is fired. And Ed becomes the interim coach.
I want to thank Les Miles for hiring me here. This is a place that I always wanted to be at. I feel that the time that I spent at USC as an interim head coach allowed me to be a better coach at LSU. And the day has come where it's time to be the head coach and have a lot of success.
What were the expectations for him at the time?
Not much. There was talk about Jimbo Fisher there at the time, that maybe they'd be able to hire him. Tom Herman was another guy that people were talking about. Maybe they'll be able to hire him. Ed Orgeron was sort of the option of last resort in a lot of people's minds. But inside the program, there were, I think, a lot more people who saw it, who got what he was talking about.
It don't matter who they tell us to play, where they tell us to play, we coming.
You know, we kind of laugh that he's in the perfect place, right? Because he is. But that being in the perfect place, him being the perfect person for that job is why he's got it. He gets it. He understands that program through and through. And I think that was ultimately what convinced Joe Oliva, the AD at the time. We don't need to bring in some big guy from outside because we got the right guy right here.
How do you think that sort of understanding of LSU's identity factored into Coach O's recruiting style and his recruiting success, obviously?
One of my favorite quotes that he gave before the Peach Bowl, people were asking him about recruiting in Louisiana, and he said,
I'm going to be in about 18 to 22 homes next week, so that means about 18 to 22 gumbos. So
this is gonna be great. The food is probably a big part of it. I don't know if it's the only part of it, but it is a big part of what he does. If your goal is to get the local guys, the kids in Louisiana who would lay down and die to win at LSU, Ed Orgeron gets that because he was that guy. Hmm. He doesn't have to give you the car salesman pitch on why you want to come play at LSU. He has driven that car a lot of miles and he knows everything about it and he knows exactly why it fits you.
David, you mentioned that Coach O has obviously evolved a lot over the years. He's no longer that young guy going out to bars and getting in trouble, but he still seems pretty similar in some ways, no?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, the energy and enthusiasm comes through. I had one player tell me about how Friday night before games, they all gather in the hotel and they have a team meeting, and Ed Orgeron comes in to try and get them hyped up for it. He walks in the room with two Red Bulls, rips off his t-shirt and shotguns both Red Bulls. And by that time, didn't matter what he said after that. Everybody's so hyped up because their crazy coach just shotgunned two Red Bulls with his shirt off. And these are the stories. I mean, this is the guys on the current team. This isn't like great anecdotes from back in the day. Like, that's who he is. He is again, willing to do anything to win football games and to get his players excited about winning football games.
How will the legend of Coach O grow in Louisiana if he wins on Monday?
I'd say they'll build a statue to him. I don't know if that's enough to like represent what that would mean to the community there. Because, it's one thing to take a team that everybody loves and win. But it means something, I think, to them that it's their guy.
We knew the national championship with beating the Orioles in our great state of Louisiana. We fought very hard every game to win every game, and which we did. To be able to play in the national championship is going to mean so much to our state of Louisiana, our players, and everybody that wore the purple and gold.
Not just the local guy, but the local guy that everybody else kicked to the curb and thought wasn't good enough. People don't really appreciate Coach O for his successes, but I think it's the failures and the personality and all that comes with it that makes the story so good and has made him so easily embraced.
All right, David, before I let you go, I'm going to do my best Coach O, then you're going to do your best Coach O. Are you ready?
All right, let's do it. Let's do it.
All right. Okay, trying to put my back into it. Go Tigers!
That was good. That was pretty good. You got the raspiness to it, which really worked. The thing that I have found is the key. It's going to get the real like level of like, so you call Ed Orgeron and you're expecting him to kind of be surprised that you called him, but instead he kind of startles you. So this is okay. Every time, this is everybody's impression of when they call Coach O. Hey, partner! That's exactly, it's this level of like, my God, I didn't mean to call you. I'm sorry.
Thanks, David.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, why the San Francisco 49ers are bursting with positivity. Whatever you want to protect, nobody has more ways to help keep you safe than ADT, the most trusted name in security. You can customize an ADT security package to help protect your home in a way that works for you and your budget. ADT has HD video doorbells, indoor and outdoor cameras, smart lights, smart locks, smart thermostats, flood sensors, fire and carbon monoxide detectors, all connected to 24/7 monitoring and controlled by the sound of your voice or the ADT app. So help protect your home today with ADT. Learn more at ADT.com/podcast. Here's another story I want you to know. The San Francisco 49ers play at home on Saturday, and as a Seahawks fan, it's not always easy for me to give credit to San Francisco. But there's one area in which the Niners have a clear edge over the field. It's not their dangerous pass rush or Kyle Shanahan's uniquely deceptive run game. No, it's the fact that the 49ers are the only team in the NFL that employs an emotional support dog.
In the player engagement office, team dog Zoe lives life at her own pace, but is a welcoming pit stop for the players as they study, train, and compete to make the 53-man roster.
High five. Good girl.
So Zoe is a one-year-old French bulldog. Her bark story, I'm so sorry, goes back to 2018. At the time, a Niners employee was dog-sitting a French bulldog named Vito and bringing the pup to camp. When the players fell in love with the dog, Niners defensive lineman Solomon Thomas, who has been outspoken about the importance of mental wellness ever since the suicide of his sister, encouraged the team to adopt a pooch. And when they found one, he helped name her Zoe. The rest was history. Now, when you think about it, it's really quite fitting that San Francisco is the most K-Niner... No, I can't do it. The most dog-friendly team in the NFL. Shanahan is known for his trickery on offense, and so many football terms have dog connotations. There's the pooch punt, the wishbone, boots and waggles, and of course, the flea flicker. And yet, despite their pre-snap shenanigans, they can also really pound the ball. Now, will Zoe be the X factor that vaults the team to the championship? Maybe, maybe not. But at the very least, they should get a slot in the Puppy Bowl. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily, Our show is produced by Michael Baltierra, Troy Farkas, Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, David Cerosi, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. I'll talk to you Monday.